There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Second hour of the show, broadcasting live from Barasti. We're up here on the rooftop garden. It is a beautiful evening. Where would you rather be than down here with something refreshing and watching sport on the big screen? What is on the big screen? Well, the former Norwich, West Ham and Rangers man Dale Gordon is alongside me watching Peterborough against Leicester. Early kick-off in the Emirates FA Cup. What's the latest, Dale?
Still 3-0 to Leicester City. Total 100% domination of this game really has been. I think Leicester, oh, it's a chance. Yeah, I think that, Peterborough United just whipped the ball in on the right-hand side. Had a great opportunity to get it back to 3-1. And I'm not sure who the player is, but unfortunately he's just hurt himself in there. So there'll be a slight delay in the restarting of the match. But, Iheanacho with two goals and Diabate as well got the first goal as well for Leicester City. They've been absolutely right at the races this afternoon. They really have, and they fully deserve their 3-0 lead.
We've got Chris McCarty alongside us as well. He's keeping an eye on the leaderboard down at the Emirates Golf Club. It is day three, round three of the Amiga Dubai Desert Classic.
It is indeed, and it's a young man by the name of Haotong Lee, the 22-year-old man from China who leads the way. He's 7-under today through his 16 holes. He's 19-under par for the tournament. He's one shot clear of the former world number one, a four-time major winner, a two-time winner at the Emirates Golf Club as well, Rory McIlroy. He has just birdied 16 to move to 3-under for the day, 18-under. Under par for the tournament as well. So Rory McIlroy making a real fist of it. Alexander Levy, who is coached by Pete Cowan, he joined our broadcast a little earlier today. He has carded a magnificent 7-under par through his 18 today. He's moved to 17-under, so here he is, there or thereabouts. Andy Sullivan, he's in the clubhouse with a round of the day, 9-under par, 16-under for the tournament. He's joined on that mark by Hayden Porteous, the South African. But the big story emerging of today, it is Haotong Lee who leads the Omega Dubai Desert Classic on day three. Couple hole still to play. Rory McIlroy looking to force his way back to the top of the leaderboard. That was after he completed his second round today. 64, six birdies on his back nine. He had a two-shot lead at that point on 15 under. All changed though, and that just gives you an idea. Golf events, they ebb, they flow, and right now it is Haotong Lee that leads the way.
Deportivo lead Levante by two goals to nil. Goals from Andone and Adriano Lopez in the first half of the home team. What's happening in the cricket, Arch?
Yeah, big wicket now just fallen for South Africa. Hashim Amla has been dismissed for 52. Quarter Panja bowled Sharma for 52. That means that AB de Villiers comes to the crease. He's two not out. He joins Dean Elgar on 55 not out. So South Africa chasing the target of 241 for victory are 130 for two. The game is delicately poised. India need another quick wicket or two and they're right back in this test match.
You've got Anglo-Welsh Cup kicking off in an hour's time. Early kick-off for you is Sale Sharks against Northampton. And then one man who's here in the UAE will be watching on with interest because two of his former clubs are in action. Leicester take on the Cardiff Blues at 7 o'clock this evening. Bath are against Newcastle at 7 o'clock this evening. And both those games, I'm sure, will be shown down here at Barasti amongst all the other live sport. He played for Leicester. He played for Bath. He won a Rugby World Cup with England in 2003. He toured with the British and Irish Lions and he scored against New Zealand with the British and Irish Lions.
Shane Byrne again, accurate to the tail. Used to be a lot. O'Connell too, and they're swapping and they're switching and they're a threat constantly to New Zealand at the line out. Now and now a try. At last, the Lions get over, and at last, those supporters are able to get to their feet. Lewis Moody, Easterby, O'Connell, line-out options all along for the Lions.
And more importantly, the drive as well, once it's taken down. This has been their best attacking weapon, which in a way is an indictment, but there's nothing wrong in Test match rugby, scoring where you can. And this time, Lewis Moody, Allah, his Leicester mentor, Neil Back, steers it over, finds the gap, and they've threatened that one for a while from the line-out. This time they've made it come good.
And Stephen Jones converts.
Rugby World Cup winner with England in 2003 and an HSBC rugby ambassador, Mr. Lewis Moody, joins us live from the Dubai Sevens ground. Afternoon to you, Lewis.
Good evening, Tom.
good to have you with us, my friend. Now, listen, you've been down at the HSBC Youth Rugby Festival over the last couple of days. 3,500 kids playing rugby in the sun. Had you prepared yourself for that when you got on the plane from the UK?
Yeah, just about. I've had the great pleasure of being out here a few times now, so understand what it's like. I've never prepared for the weather, though. You know, they were de-icing the plane wings as I took off, and when we arrived, it's sort of 28 degrees, stood handing out trophies. But it's just such a great state. I love coming out here, you know, seeing the impact that rugby has and the engagement that the community out here has, you know, at the Exiles ground, and just the joy that the kids are playing the game, whether it's from sort of under sevens or whether it's the under 19 girls or under 18 girls we saw this afternoon play. It's just it's a great spectacle.
It's a great example, it's a great advertisement for rugby the world over. I know HSBC do a lot for rugby here in the region through their youth festivals, as they do around the globe as well. Does this sort of give you a sort of sense of pride that everything that is great about rugby is seeing through to the fore, especially in a part of the world that might not be seen as a traditional hotbed for rugby?
Oh, absolutely. You know, having watched the game, and I think it's the ninth year of the festival, of the rugby festival over here in Dubai, you know, having seen the impact rugby has, having seen the number of people that play it, and the fact that rugby isn't, you know, the number one sport out here, but the game has grown so strongly. And, you know, talking to the players, you know, the young lads or the coaches, or the girls team, you know, talking to the girls team about what rugby, why rugby was important to them. And, you know, it was all about the support and the social time that they had together, not only on the pitch, but off it. It's just the values of the game always sort of ring through very strongly, whatever part of the world you're in. And I think, you know, over here in Dubai, it's just very good at bringing the communities together, you know, and having seen the growth of the Emirati game over the last couple of years as well, certainly for young people, you know, health is key, isn't it? And playing sport and rugby in particular, it's just such a good way of staying active and fit.
I love one of the tweets that you sent a little earlier on today from the ground. I think it was the under-10s that you were presenting to yesterday. Did a bit of a moody selfie, a mad dog selfie with some of the lads. And didn't you ask one of their players who scored the winning try or something? And they came back with a very succinct response.
Oh, they did. You know, it was. I asked one of them how close the game was, and they said, "Oh, we scored in the dying minutes. It was 2-1." And I was like, "Oh, okay. Well, who was who scored the winning try?" And his immediate response was, "Oh, it doesn't matter who scored the winning try. It was just a team effort." I was like, from a 9-year-old, it just, you know, kids teach you so much. You sort of, as an adult, you think, oh, you know, the guy that scored must have been so delighted and the team will be delighted for him. But actually, to hear that from a 9-year-old, you know, that's what the game's about for them. We should talk to the kids more about coaching. I tell you what, they teach us far more than the coaches ever will.
Lewis, great to have you here over in the UAE at Dubai. Must be very encouraging for you as a rugby fan, a rugby follower, supporter, sports fan, to see so many kids actively involved in the sport. How did you come into the sport? Did you take part in these types of festivals? What was your sort of pathway into rugby greatness?
Very similar indeed, yeah. So a lot of junior rugby festivals and tournaments. You know, I started playing when I was 5, and the game was full contact then. And, you know, I suddenly found something I absolutely loved, you know, throwing myself around and tackling people in all weather conditions, but predominantly in the mud in England. And then I just fell in love with it, and I stayed in the game all the way through. It was something that always gave me an outlet, you know, when I was at school, and, you know, As you grow up and you get older, you know, school can be a wonderful thing, and I loved my time at school. It can also be tough at times, you know, because kids can be cruel, and rugby was always the outlet for me. You know, if I was ever frustrated at anything, rugby was just such a brilliant outlet. And I think, you know, for frustration, for that physicality, and just for being a teenage boy in particular, to get out there and play and release all that testosterone and frustration is brilliant. And I was very fortunate in the school that I played at. Also had the Leicester Tigers head coach was the first team coach. And when I was 18 and leaving school, he just said, "Well, why don't you go down to the Leicester Tigers and see how you get on?" and that was my route. But all the coaches at every stage during my career, I feel, had an impact. I like to think that every coach that coached me and every player I played with had left their own mark and had an impact on me as a player. So, you know, when you're out here with the HSBC guys at the Rugby Festival here in Dubai, all those coaches will have an impact on these players. And sometimes you have to remind yourself how important your role is as a coach and actually what you have to teach them, and making sure the values are, you know, the important values are at the forefront. It's not about winning. It's about being a team and sharing in success. If you enjoy it, then, you know, those successes and achievements will be a byproduct of that. But yeah, it was a journey that I thoroughly loved and thoroughly missed now that I'm retired, sadly.
Lewis, you're talking there about leaving a mark and making an impact. One man who's been doing that on rugby pitches throughout his career and is leaving a mark and making an impact here in the region at the moment is Apollo Perolini. I know he's been down there at the Sevens over the last couple of days promoting his academy, but also his role with the UAE Rugby National Team and Federation here as well. Do you think that's one of the sort of benefits here? You know, we've got a big Samoan community, we've got a big island community, we've got a lot of kids coming through the ranks as well, but we've also got those coaches bringing a unique style from not just that part of the world but other parts of the world. It's a very international approach to coaching and different rugby cultures. Can only be a benefit, I'm sure.
Absolutely, and it was fascinating chatting to Apollo yesterday about his academy and the coaches and, you know, the links that they're creating back with clubs in the UK or in Europe. So there's a real pathway for players coming through out in Dubai to actually go and find professional rugby, which is wonderful. And what you just spoke about there, Tom, was that diversity of coaching, having you know, different cultures teaching your kids. You know, there's just so much variety. That's what you need in the game as a young man. You need to be exposed, or a young girl, you need to be exposed to as many different types of rugby and sports and opportunity and skill sets that you can be. So I think that diversity that you have out here in Dubai will only be a really good and strong thing going forward for all young players and for all developing coaches as well.
He keeps telling us, Apollo, all the time, AP, keeps telling us how hard the Samoans were and how they were the toughest team on the international circuit. I know you lined up against them a couple of times, Lewis. Were they really that nails?
Oh, a big bunch of softies, mate, those Samoans. They, you know, on the pitch, they were absolutely brutal. But off the pitch, they genuinely the nicest, humblest, most generous and kind group of people that you could ever hope to meet, whether it's the Fijians, Tongans, Samoans, or just those island boys. They have a unique way of doing things. Their culture is a lovely one, but they are brutal on the pitch. Yeah, you didn't want to get hit by a Brian Lima or an Apollo Perolini, that's for sure. But the one thing I loved about him, the memories that I always reflect back on, is how tough those games were and the adversity that he went through and putting in those big hits and getting bashed up, but afterwards always being able to go and share a drink and have a conversation. And those Samoan boys, I remember after being sent off at Twickenham, sadly, being the only Englishman at the time ever to have done so as well in 150 years, and it was with a Leicester teammate, Alex Tuolangi, who was playing for Samoa that day. But after the game, and we were both thoroughly disappointed with ourselves and what had happened, I went up and the coach, Samu Sititi, the captain, Samu Sititi for Samoa, invited me over to speak to his family. And they're a lovely group of people, and we're all sort of, I was very apologetic obviously for what happened, and saw Alex and his family, but they play rugby for the right reasons. So I think having someone like Apollo over here leading that youth example is wonderful for Dubai.
Lewis, before we let you go back to your ambassadorial duties with HSBC and the kids tournament up there, it would be remiss of us not to ask you a bit about Six Nations getting underway next weekend. Round one, of course, some big matches taking place. A lot of people have started to look towards the back end of the tournament, with England at home on the final weekend taking on Ireland as being maybe the key match, as it was last year in Dublin. Just what are your thoughts, and how do you see this year's Six Nations playing out?
Oh, I think it's going to be. I think it's going to be a fantastic tournament this year. You know, if last year's anything to go by, so many teams are playing well. You know, Scotland are really starting to come to the fore. Ireland in Europe, you look at the domination of the Irish teams in that Champions Cup. You know, Leinster so dominant at the moment. And the Premiership side, you know, England really, although as a national side, England are probably favourites, actually, club side and club form has not been so good, certainly in Europe. So will that have an impact on the tournament? You know, maybe confidence might not be quite as high as it once was. But I certainly think England have the right to think they go in as tournament favourites. Ireland will be pushing them. I think England have got a tough first match because they've got Italy, and that's a no-win situation for them. You know, if they don't win by 60 points, everyone will wonder what was wrong. If they just win and it's a tough game, you know, people will people will say they're not doing well enough. So for them, I think they may well have wanted a tougher fixture first up, but the French will provide lots of competition as it goes through. But as always, the Six Nations will be a wonderful opportunity just to see some fantastic players out there and hopefully see the game being played in the right manner. But I'm confident England will come away with a trophy again this year, although slightly biased.
Lewis, bless you, mate. Thank you so much indeed for your time. Thanks for coming out and joining us here in the UAE yet again. Don't leave it too long, my friend. Come out and see us when you get the awesome opportunity. Big thanks also to Kerry, to Ben, to Vera, all the team from CSM, to David, Mike and all the crew from HSBC. If you're not heading straight out of the country, then get yourself in front of the rugby this evening. I'm sure that will be something you will be looking forward to. But for now, HSBC Rugby Ambassador Lewis Moody, we really thank you for your time.
Cheers, Tom. Take care, guys.
Big thanks to Lewis then for joining us live from the Sevens ground where the HSBC Youth Rugby Festival has been ongoing. I was down there a little earlier on today. I was down there yesterday. 3,500, Arch. 3,500 kids.
It's phenomenal, isn't it? I can't think of another sport, maybe in football, it doesn't even touch that, but to have 3,500 kids, you know, from all around the world coming together to play whatever sport it is, it's great. I'm sure it's a very festive time for the parents who are there having a good social occasion. But to get out there and have so many kids together just running around, I'm sure Dale, who, as a man who works in, you know, age group sports and as a football coach and your teams, that's a wonderful number of kids are being active.
Oh, it's just fantastic. I think that since my time, 5 years now in the UAE, I think that, you know, everyone says that football is the first sport, but I'm not so sure. I think that rugby is, and the good thing about the rugby thing as well, with the boys that play football as well, it does definitely have an effect with regards to this weekend, with regards to teams in the leagues at football at the moment, because there's a lot of, as Chris knows this as well, there's a lot of professional teams over in the UAE at the moment on their mid-season break as well. And unfortunately, we're not allowed to use the pitches at Jebel Ali and Nad El Sheba, etc. And obviously then the schools, the Festival of Rugby, obviously at the Sevens, these players are going to play for their teams as well, you know, with the oval ball. And fair play to them. And I think it's fantastic to see
that. Did you ever play? Did you ever play?
No. No,
didn't fancy it?
No. Well, I never used to tackle anybody in football, so let alone. I was asked when I first came here. I was asked by I think it was a Malta something. It was the vets one for the Sevens, and I was asked to play. But I had to explain to them that I just had a hip operation. I didn't obviously fancy the hip coming out of the joint again as I was literally walking down the wing, as well as probably taking one around my neck as well. So no, I think it's fantastic. The 3,500 kids at you know, at the Emirates for a Festival of Rugby.
It's been a really good one. Well done to Jenny. All the team down there, the tournament directors, you get representatives from all the different clubs who put this one together. So done over 2 days, a great turnout, great weather, and well done to all those that competed. Thanks, as I said, to Kerry, to Ben, to Vera, all the team from CSM and Fast Track, to Dave Ricotdimer from HSBC and all the HSBC crew for making this one happen again, and of course Lewis, who we just heard there. And I think we should mention as well that friend of the show, new friend of Dubai, Mike Phillips, I'm sure he would have played with Lewis probably yeah, on one of those Lions tours at least, has also took the opportunity to launch his academy yesterday.
Yeah, Just Play Rugby Academy. It was down at North Anglia School on Hester Street. I know Mike and the team there, Emlyn Jones, who's a coach alongside him, they were running a free clinic yesterday. So rugby is thriving, and I'm with Dale on this. I mean, we're very fortunate here that we're involved in the Emirates Airline Dubai Rugby Sevens. It's as good as anything, marrying the elite sport with the community and the grassroots. And 3,500 kids, Tom, it's such a shame. And I appreciate Chris Brown and Dale Gordon to my right as well. A lot has been done to unify and unite the footballing academies. Something like that, that's what's missing here. You think of the Gothia Cup, which is the largest, the biggest youth football festival up in Sweden every year. It has about 1,700 teams, over 4,500 games over a week long, and I see no reason why, or maybe on a smaller scale, we don't get all the academies. I think it's somewhere around the region of 65 football academies in Dubai alone.
That's correct, Chris. And I think the closest we're probably going to get to, you know, we'll see this weekend, witnessing it, the Sevens, is they do the Dubai Super Cup at the Sevens over the Easter period. But and Chris knows that, you know, I'm having to travel back to the UK with my under-12s team at Easter to go and experience, you know, my under-12s playing against the pro teams, but also as well enjoying a three-day tournament, a festival of football back home in my hometown of Norwich. And that is how far we're having to go to obviously experience something like that. So for rugby to absolutely nail it right on the head at the moment with regards to 3,500, it would be wonderful if we had something like that for football. But you know, I would say that rugby probably is up there. It's got to be the first sport.
I mean, one of them that we had when I was at school back in the UK many years ago, Roslyn Park Sevens, big. Mm. It took a bit of a dip for a few years, but is now, in the resurgence of Sevens rugby, has re-established itself. And that was real sort of breeding ground for talent coming into the game.
Yeah, that was one of the original sort of Sevens tournaments. And we go back to Sevens rugby. It was actually originated in Scotland. I think the Melrose Sevens.
Where
it came from many years ago. And it's become that global expansion piece of world rugby where Sevens is much more accessible for a lot of people. As we see it this weekend taking place in Sydney, the third leg of the HSBC World Series. We saw leg one here at Dubai. Leg two was down in Cape Town. And we're seeing the Rugby Sevens circuit.
The Gold Coast, isn't it?
No, Sydney.
Oh, it's in Sydney.
In Sydney. Sydney Sevens, yeah. So it's the third leg of, I think, eight legs on the HSBC World Sevens Series.
I was watching some of it earlier as well. Did you see that Fiji game, the Fiji-New Zealand game?
No.
Did you see it, Arch?
No.
You didn't see it?
Fiji won?
In the last dying seconds. And they sort of took the plaudits on the day. And Fiji have been appalling over the last couple of weeks. They haven't been the same old Fiji. New Zealand have been imperious over the last couple of weeks and on first day of this tournament. But, it was a great crowd pleaser. Obviously, it wouldn't have come as a great result for you, but a great crowd pleaser for the crowd down there.
I can tell you, though, I'll give you a quick update live from Sydney. That, of course, it's round three of the HSBC World Series. New Zealand and Australia, the old rivals, will contest the women's final in that. We've seen some great competition matches between those two teams. But the Cup quarterfinal teams have all been confirmed in the men's series. It's an all-African quarterfinal. South Africa will face Kenya. That'll be a popular one with the crowds. Fiji, after beating New Zealand, they will take on the USA. Perry Baker's been in fine form for the USA, the speedster. Argentina will play England. And then, of course, who's in the last quarterfinals? The host Australia taking on New Zealand. So that'll be a cracker there. And I'm sure New Zealand will be well populated in the fans there. So four cracking quarterfinals to come in the Sydney Sevens.
It looks like a laugh. I think we might, you know, you and I do our bucket list thing about places to go and watch sport. That looks a laugh. I was on the sofa this morning watching it, and I thought we could get stuck in there, fellas. I think it wouldn't be a miss. So if there's any way that we can find hook or crook a reason to get down there.
The one I haven't done, Tom, and I think you maybe have done, and I was talking to a couple of lads down at the golf last night, and they've done this themselves, is Hong Kong. I've been told, I'm reliably informed, that Hong Kong Sevens matches anything. So that is very much on the bucket list. I'm looking at you here. Have you done Hong Kong Sevens?
Yes.
That is
apparently.
Well, didn't see much of it. Not much of the rugby action on the field, right?
The only thing I'd say about Hong Kong, yes, the atmosphere is amazing. Yes, it's a marathon,
party,
not a sprint. It's sort of fairly central in the town, but the weather can be pretty harsh. You know, it's the humidity that gets you. They talk about the Cape Town Sevens. They talk about the Sydney Sevens. That, you know, it's nigh on sort of perfect time of year. And look at the crowd today. I must say that what I've been doing, Emirates Airline Dubai Rugby Sevens, for last 17 years, and international sevens as well. Seen a couple of very impressive costumes worn down those years. but I think today took the biscuit, one of them in the crowd, South African lad, who had this massive sort of cutout of an avocado, of just like a half an avocado. So it was a big old cutout. He had a little sort of peepee hole for his eyes in the middle. Massive sort of green avocado with his belly hanging out. The whole, so the belly was the avocado pip. And they had this whole thing. And this just became the talk of the stadium. It was brilliant. So simple. Brilliant. So if you get the opportunity to tune in tomorrow to be part of that party atmosphere, then make sure you do. We've got more sport for you coming up in just a few moments.
The Grill has all the sport you need right now on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Going to get to the live scores for you in just a few moments' time, but we're just going to take a moment to reflect on the career of that HSBC rugby ambassador that we've just been talking about. Toured with the British and Irish Lions back in 2005, played over 200 times for Leicester and Bath. He represented England 71 times and, of course, was part of the winning World Cup team. Sorry, Arch, you're saying something off air there that everyone can hear. But apparently you're doing that football thing of covering your mouth as well.
No, we've just seen that wonderful picture you were talking about before the break of the man in the avocado suit. And I was just saying to Chris, this could be the outfit that Robbie Greenfield wears to next year's, this year's rugby sevens. It's fantastic.
Actually, it looks like Robbie Greenfield.
I will tweet it.
We've got to tweet it so everyone can see. Like, while we're doing that, let's just hear about... They called him Mad Dog, didn't they? Not Robbie Greenfield, but...
Lewis. Yes.
Why did they call him Mad Dog?
Because he played rugby like a mad dog. He put his body in positions people shouldn't put them on the rugby field, and he gave disregard for that. And he was a wonderful all-action player. So that was why his nickname was Mad Dog.
Tom, there's another Mad Dog who had the nickname of Mad Dog. Who would that be?
Oh, I know.
And I'll give you a little clue.
A football manager.
Football manager. Used to play for the team that you support.
Former Barnet boss.
Oh, Piercy.
No.
Psycho.
No, not Psycho.
No.
You're on the right track, though. Football manager.
Julian Dix?
No.
No, you've got to get last attempt.
Former teammate of yours,
yeah,
as well.
All them West, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
all them West Ham supporters now will be pulling their head. They'll be texting in now.
Doesn't pull any punches either, as a manager and as
a
pundit.
Had the question about George Weir with the which European manager?
I didn't give
and
you that.
Now
answer.
We're on.
I'm going
to
give you all the answers after we've wrapped up on Mad Dog Moodle. We'll have a little think about these, then we'll come back with Georgie Weir, Mad Dogs, and more. But talking of Mad Dogs, Mad Dogs and Englishman Lewis Moody.
Few players have had such a complete disregard for their physical well-being as Lewis Moody. In a club career spanning 16 years for Leicester and Bath, he won 71 caps for England and played for the British and Irish Lions. But his fearless style of play took its toll, and earlier this year, he announced his retirement.
I think initially it was very difficult because I still wanted to continue playing. Sadly, the shoulder wouldn't let me, so I had to make that decision Moreover, my body really made the decision for me, but mentally you've still got to press the button to say, okay, it's over. I have to admit, the first time I really missed it was, the first game of the season. I sat down and watched it, and you could still feel the old emotion building within, and then a realisation that, you're not going to get to step foot on the park again and let any of it out. So, but I don't look back with any frustration, really, because I was very lucky to have, incredibly successful career with some fantastic players and teams, and to have been a small part of all of the success I had, I would have chewed someone's hand off.
His uncompromising approach earned him the nickname Mad Dog, befitting an Englishman who thrived on the physical aspects of the game.
Being a flanker and playing rugby is all about the combative physical nature of the game, and that was always something I loved, and just getting stuck into each other and testing yourself against some of the best players in the world.
One such occasion came 2 years ago when England travelled down under for a two-test series against the Wallabies.
Quaid had actually embarrassed me the game before. I think I'd missed about six tackles on him alone because I gave him too much space, and he's got such elusive feet that I was furious with myself. And, in my head I was thinking, there's no way I should play next weekend. And I was captain. So I had a quick chat with the defensive coach, Mike Ford. Said, look, give me a chance to get back at this guy. And from the first line out, I was just targeted with going and getting him, and I did exactly that. And I felt much better anyway about myself afterwards.
Moody's achievements were all the more remarkable, considering that in 2005 he was diagnosed with colitis, a debilitating bowel disease.
I was losing a lot of blood every time I went to the loo, and the classic bloke thing, I waited about a month till I told anyone, and finally went and saw the doctor, and he very quickly diagnosed it with ulcerative colitis. And it was a bit of a nightmare those first 2 years, because you try and keep it quiet. You know, as you said, I had a lot of injuries, and I didn't want this to be another reason for coaches not to pick me, or, you know, because there's every opportunity I might have to run off the pitch during a game because I need the loo. And it was a very debilitating disease, even to the point I live 5 minutes from training, and I'd have to plan my route so that I could possibly stop six times just on the way, a 5 minute journey to get there. And I didn't speak about it with my mates or anyone really, bar my wife and my folks, for a couple of years. And as soon as you do start to talk about it, it becomes acceptable. It's just then something you deal with. You just have to get on with it, don't you? It's one of those things you overcome. You know, a lot of people deal with a lot more severe illnesses and issues. So now I'm a champion for Crohn's and Colitis UK, and a lot of kids and people come and contact with me since I've spoken about it and telling me their issues, and they're trying to help me. They want to know more. And so for me, that's the biggest thing.
Respected by his peers, Moody was one of the most successful players in the game. Twice winner of the Heineken Cup and seven Premiership titles with Leicester, but the undoubted highlight came in 2003. Johnny Wilkinson may have kicked England to World Cup glory, but Moody's role in the build-up to that golden strike has often gone unnoticed.
Lewis Moody coming on for England now.
So I was lucky to even be on the field. Richard Hill, I think, got cramp, and Clive put me on.
Moody gets the ball immediately.
Yeah, I was lucky to be in a side with so many incredible individuals. For them all to come together at that time, in that occasion in Australia, was just an amazing day. Something that always lives with you, and it's incredible to think it was nearly 10 years ago.
Moody led his country 11 times, his final appearance against France at last year's World Cup. An inspiring figure who led by example on the pitch, he's set to do the same off it.
We were doing a trek across the Yukon in February, which is 300 miles across Alaska, and it's called the Yukon Arctic Ultra Marathon. So it's going to be a challenge, to say at least. I think it gets down to about minus 50 degrees, and we're doing it for Hope HIV, which is a charity I've been involved with for about 6 years. I'll certainly be coaching. I've done a number of coaching sessions over the summer with St Vincent and Bermuda, the two national sides, and when you see people learn very quickly from just a small bit of information that you can give them is one of the joys you get out of it. I owe a huge amount to rugby and still do, which is why I think it's so important to try and give as much back as possible to the next generation coming through.
He's a good man. Big thanks to Lewis Moody for joining us a little earlier on. Big thanks to him for being here as the ambassador for this year's HSBC Youth Rugby Festival down at the Sevens ground. Right, what's going on in sport? Let's get over to Disco Dale, who has been performing his iconic goal celebrations for us during the break there. What's going on?
Well, we've gone from Rule Fox's thighs to my iconic goal celebration. So
it's a phase I'm going through, fella.
Let's go back to Posh. Let's see how they're getting on. They're still 3-0 down, Tom.
I'm a bit Posh.
52 minutes into the second half now. And again, a little bit like the first half, you know, just both teams just trying to get a foot in the second half. Leicester obviously sitting there with a 3-goal lead, two from Iheanacho and one from Tabati, who on his debut. Three excellent goals, got to be said. But you can just see, obviously, from the stats as well, though, Tom, that, you know, they're really struggling at the moment. Peter Burrows did force anything, really, in front of the Leicester goal. At the moment, we've got Leicester City had 10 shots and four on target, and poor old Posh have had no shots on target. So apart from them huffing and puffing, they're not much quality. You can see the difference in the two sides. But what I have been impressed is with Iheanacho. You know, a big money move in the summer, like I mentioned earlier in the first half, hasn't really been given the opportunity as a first team run, and obviously shows great attitude to go out there this afternoon and score his two goals that he's got in the game. So coming up now to 54 minutes in the game, half a chance there for Peterborough, but still remains Peterborough 0, Leicester City 3.
McCarty, I don't know if you heard the chat that we were having when you were making your way over from Golf Club, but we were talking to Dalo at the top of the show about Peterborough. Great tradition at the club. Everyone knows about the Posh. They've had some great characters down there in the past as well. Why are they in League One?
Oof, a bit of a yo-yo club. Darren McAnthony is a colourful character, their owner. They had Darren Ferguson. He did a great job with them, and they had a couple of real good players. There was the boy Craig McHale Smith, who was banging them in alongside Aaron McLean. They were prolific at championship level, but you're right, they've not really kicked on. They are, by very nature, a pretty small club. Let's be honest with that.
Fan base, it
is a small club. The championship
catchment
is... Catchment area, I guess, but the championship is so unforgiving, Tom. You look at some of the monster clubs that are in the championship: Aston Villa, Leeds United, Sheffield Wednesday, yeah. Nottingham Forest. For Peterborough, I always felt that they were doing well being in the championship. Then it's just about recruiting well, and let's be honest, they did that. They had Lee Tomlin in there for a spell. Yeah. They had some good players. The man that manages them now, Grant McCann, former Northern Ireland international, he was a good little midfielder, but you always felt Peterborough were a small club, kind of punching above their weight. League One is probably... about their level. They're a decent team. They're there or thereabouts in the playoff chase just now. But
you're right, at least about Darren Ferguson. I mean, also as well, Joe Lewis, who's now the goalkeeper for Aberdeen. And you're right, I think Darren Ferguson, you know, he was a young manager, lots of enthusiasm. Barry Fry as well, as just watching the monitor there that's sitting in the stands as well. And I think with Darren Ferguson as well, you know, he had two or three good seasons there, and he became a wanted man, like, you know, a lot of these young managers do. Alex Neil, I could probably put that on par with when Hamilton Academicals in Scotland, Norwich City picked him up and done fantastic for Norwich. And then these managers do become very, very sought after. Paul Lambert is another example of that as well. You know,
didn't work out for Darren. You went to Preston, didn't you?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And I think he's now at Doncaster, if I'm right. They are a club that does sometimes get that little gem in their side. We mentioned at the top of the show as well, Chris, that Andreas Borg, who is from It's Just Football, from this part of the world, is on the bench today. But they are struggling a little bit within this game, but you can just see the different quality. And then it is, I said to Tom as well, is one of them pitches where it's very, very wide. And, you know, a side like Leicester with the quality they've got, you know, will take advantage of that.
Hang on, boys, there's been goals. Goals are plenty in La Liga. Deportivo had a 2-0 lead going in to half-time. It's now 2-2 with 6 minutes remaining. Levante have scored in the 80th and the 84th. A brace for Alvarez in this one. So it's Deportivo 2, Levante 2, with round about 5 minutes remaining plus stoppage time. We've also half-time in the international that's going on at the moment. Korean Republic are taking on Moldova, of course.
Of course.
And it's 0-0 in that one. Arch has been a wicket in the cricket.
Yes, it's big wicket as well. So this game
is... Put the avocado away, fella. All right.
Yes, South Africa chasing 241 for victory at home, and the Wanderers taking on India. And there's a big wicket. It's A.B. de Villiers, Kort Rahane, bowled Bumrah for 6. That means that Dean Elgar is currently going well. He is on 65 on out. Faf du Plessis is the new batsman at the crease. So South Africa chasing 241 for victory are 140 for 3. They still need another 101 runs. 7 wickets remaining. It is a well-poised test match down at the Wanderers.
Goals in Spain, and also Dan Posh.
Well, we're expecting to be 4-0 to Leicester City, but it's not, Tom. It's Leicester City just conceded the goal there. It was from a corner on the left-hand side, swung in, not much quality on it really, but the Leicester defence didn't really react to it. It dropped to Hughes just on the half-term. He swiveled on it, got a good strike on it with his instep. The goalkeeper should have probably done a little bit better, but they've dragged one goal back here on 58 minutes now. There's only two goal deficit now. It's Peterborough 1, Leicester City 3. It'd be interesting to see how now Leicester come out, obviously conceding and try to get back into getting that gap again. But that will give them a lot of heart, Peterborough, going forwards now. Probably attacking the end where their supporters are behind the goal. So they're having a real good go at it again here. And another ball, and they're forced another corner on 58 minutes. So, you know, fair play to them. Whatever the manager has said to them at halftime, the reaction is there.
Well, we're going to talk golf, we're going to talk Super Bowl, and we're going to talk American sport after this.
Let's go!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Okie dokie, let us turn our attention to all things Super Bowl. How many Super Bowls have there been, Arch?
Super Bowl 50, there's been 51, and next early hours of next Monday week, It'll be Super Bowl 52 live from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Who's
freezing
in
tundra. Well, it's the defending champions, the New England Patriots, looking for a sixth ring, of course, for the celebrated duo, powered by the record-breaking veteran quarterback Tom Brady and the super coach Bill Belichick, looking for a sixth ring for New England Patriots, the AFC champions. They are taking on the Philadelphia Eagles, the NFC champions, and of course they are, well, they're leaning heavily on their backup quarterback. Their franchise quarterback Carson Wentz is injured. Nick Foles stepped in and did a good job last week when they beat the Vikings. And yeah, that's all taking place Minneapolis, Minnesota, Super Bowl 52, Sunday week. Here's a little flavor of what we can look forward to.
Philly, they're taking on the Patriots.
No, in Super Bowl 52, we'll have the Patriots and the Philadelphia Eagles.
Super Bowl 52 will take place Minneapolis, Minnesota, the battle for the Lombardi Trophy. New England Patriots, the AFC champions, taking on the Philadelphia Eagles. Big talking point is always a massive media action the week before a Super Bowl. The big talking point at the moment is about the star tight end for the Patriots, Rob Gronkowski. Will he play? He's been had some injury issues over the last couple of years. He's going through a concussion protocol. Our good friends at ESPN are debating, can the Eagles win if Gronkowski is not fit?
Let's talk about the middle of the field, and
that'd be
Rob Gronkowski, who was listed with a concussion on the Patriots' initial Super Bowl injury report. It marks the first time the Patriots officially recognized that their star tight end sustained a concussion, a second quarter hit, sorry, Teddy. We're trying to hold hands against the Jags on Sunday. Teddy, should the Patriots be favored? They're favored by five if they don't have Gronk.
If they don't have Gronkowski, yeah, they should still be favored. I mean, they will find other ways to get the football in the end zone, like they did with Amendola, like they do with their backs, like they did versus Atlanta. However, I mean, I don't want a news flash here on First Take or anything like that. Rob's going to be there.
Okay.
Gronkowski will be there. Concussion protocol, keeping you out for 2 weeks. A player like this, that with a toughness like this, I just don't see it happening.
But what version of himself, Teddy? Because, like, against the Giants the second time, that was a compromised Gronk, and maybe that was a difference in the game. What version of Gronk shows up? Because if it's not 100% Gronk, I don't think they should be favored. The real advantage they have on offense, other than obviously Brady, is that Gronk is a mismatch. I mean, so it comes down, he's a mismatch for everyone who ever lived. That's the mismatch you got on the field. You take that away, it's not the same offense.
Yeah.
Well, for me, the way I look at it, as long as even if Gronk can be on the field as a decoy, I think that matters. I think you got to call less patterns over the middle. If I'm Bill Belichick, because again, I think he's a bit suspect health-wise right now. You need him in this game more so than ever before because you don't have Edelman, and because you don't have Edelman, yeah, Amendola stepped up last week and did what he did, and we understood what that means. But to do it 2 weeks in a row, I think that's a long shot.
We're talking about a concussion, right?
Yep. Yes.
We're talking about a concussion. You don't get back on the field unless you're healed from that concussion. They don't let you back on out there if you're groggy. I'm groggy. I'm not 100%. Unless there's something else that happened on that play where Rob has hurt some other place, he's good everywhere else. And he'll take that field if he gets through this concussion protocol with a clear mind, ready to play. So If he clears it, he's good to go. So I don't think there's any argument in terms of what version of himself he will be, because once the lights start to clear and the fogginess and the dizziness is all gone, you're ready to go again. Your body, no knee, ankle, shoulder, this isn't that what we're talking about. I'd be with you, Max, if this was a back, his back or his, you know, some lower extremity where he couldn't run. Once he clears that protocol, I'm telling you, he's there.
But, and if he's not there, you still think they're favorite? Even, like, let's say for a second, I know you're assuming, it, but what, for whatever reason, he's actually not on the field, still favored?
Yeah, that's an impossibility in my mind.
Yeah.
Wow, plenty of talking points ahead of Super Bowl 52. All the discussion around Tom Brady, can he win a sixth ring? Supercoach Bill Belichick, they've done it in every possible way to win the previous Super Bowl titles. New England Patriots are a dynasty in the NFL. It's their third Super Bowl in the last 4 years. It's the first team now to appear in 10 Super Bowl finals. They're coming up against the Philadelphia Eagles. Of course, Nick Foles, the backup quarterback, will take place behind center. They do have a very, very good defense. Do they have the ability to put some pressure on Tom Brady? I'm not sure. Can they win the special teams battle? One man who's definitely looking forward to the game, he's more so looking forward to Justin Timberlake at the halftime show. Chris McCarty, very quickly, are you looking forward to
I'm looking forward to it.
A wardrobe malfunction.
I am looking forward to this one. I'm with you. I think I'm with the guy there. I think it was Teddy who mentioned Rob Gronkowski starts all day long, and then you look at the weapons at Tom Brady's disposal. Brandon Cooks, you look at Chris Hogan, you look at Danny Amendola, who stepped up against the Jaguars. Then you look at his running backs, James White, Deion Lewis. The Patriots, on paper, win this. They'll put an awful lot of pressure on Nick Foles, as good as he was against the Vikings. This is a whole different ballgame. It is the Super Bowl. It would be a big shock in my mind if a backup quarterback goes and beats the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
Fellas, will weather play a part or not? Because you said it's going to be cold.
It's indoor stadium.
Yeah, but I mean, in and around the event.
They're both cold weather teams. So Philadelphia's got snow, New England's freezing. They're in Minnesota, which is a very cold place of the world this time of year, and it's an indoor stadium. So, no, both teams will be fine with the weather.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.